Hey, this is Luke. Welcome to Lure It Up Podcast. Powered by Basel D Magazine. We'll be interviewing local creators who were in and around the clock for the Popover season and beyond. Join us on this journey as we go behind the scenes of what makes Popover, Popover.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 1 of the Lure It Up Podcast, powered by Basel D Magazine, recorded and produced by Robbie at Nameless Productions. On tonight's podcast, we'll be featuring Quan, the 2022 Pickety Crop Monarch, and writer Shane Jones from the Water Street Boys. We hope you enjoy! Basel D. Okay, guys, so we are here with Quan. Hi, Quan, what's up?
Hello, hello.
Yes, I'm so excited about this episode because it's all about taking us back to Popover 2022 and just reliving the memories of our culture through music. And me and Luke had this conversation about, you know, what would be the first thing that we will talk about. And it's so interesting to see that there is a young, fresh, new Calypso monarch of 2022, Quan. So first of all, congratulations. Woo!
Thank you, cheers. I feel pleasure to know that you guys chose me.
Yes, we're so excited and we're so happy to share this moment again and relive this, you know, new time to be happy about, you know, Calypso.
For sure.
Okay, so my first question to you is, if reincarnation was a thing, don't make me human again. I want to be free. Mm-hmm. What does freedom mean to you?
When I think about it, for me, freedom is anything. And I mean, I had a performance the other day and...
Oh, by the way, if you're listening to this podcast, that quotation is from his winning song, Animal Kingdom.
That's right. So for me, being free is free in any way. However you want to put it, free financially, free in, when it, you know, when it comes to health. Anyway, as long as if reincarnation is a thing, I just want to be free. I don't want to be caught up with the ills of the human being. That's what they're saying, you know?
Awesome.
Yeah, man.
And I literally just watched your performance for the winning Animal Kingdom. Yeah. And to me, you're giving me this shy demeanor here, but you are so free on stage. Performance quality is on point. You know, your diction and everything is clear. And obviously, this would have come from being in a junior monarch.
Of course.
So give me, you know, your journey on how that started. First of all, give me your journey on music and then going into the junior monarch and then hopping over to Pickety Crop and just snatching the crown from everybody. Give me your little story.
Well, being on stage and performing, that's my happy place. I think that's where I'm most comfortable. So that's why, you know, I could be here talking to you now and then I get a whole different persona once I hit the stage. It really started, I can't say there was an exact date. I just always had a knack for performing. And my dad, he used to do a bit of singing himself. So, you know, I would just be at home and I would obviously hear him singing. And he used to sing Calypso.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, who's your dad?
His name is Brian King. He didn't do too well.
Okay. But you just, you know, taking the baton.
Exactly. So I don't know what daddy would afford to do in his time. So I would be singing at home and we had some songs that I would always be listening to and he had a low microphone and daddy, come watch me sing. And that was just, you know, where it started. I always think back and realize, you know, that's where I really started honing my skills as a performer. And my mom, she enjoyed going to the Junior Calypso Monarch competition. And, you know, so I would go and I don't know. There was just always something about Calypso, the fierce rivalry that, you know, used to go on at Junior Monarch. And it was just amazing to me. And I just knew that, you know, I wanted to compete on this stage. Mm-hmm. I think the first time I entered, I was maybe about 9 or 10.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, so I was quite young. And
you must have like a little baby voice.
And let me tell you, I could not sing to save my life.
Oh, shoot. But you know, once it's cute, you get away with everything.
But then let me get away with it. Because I didn't manage to make it past the preliminary stage. And that was really my fate for a number of years up until 2018 when I won.
Oh.
Yeah, that was the first time that I actually made it past the preliminary stage.
And then win.
And then
win.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
That's a testament there.
Exactly. And that really was the name of the song, Why I Sing. Mm-hmm. And that song was pretty much my junior monarch journey. It was just testament of, you know, everything that I would have gone through. And the opening line said, 6 years of trying to make a mark in Calypso, 6 years of knocking on the door. And, you know, that tells you the length of time that, you know, I would have been trying and trying and trying. And, you know, it speaks about being determined.
And resilient.
Exactly. You yes. know, a high level of resilience.
At
for
such
sure.
a young age as well.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, being young and being in the entertainment industry is not easy. And getting a lot of no's, because I'm a dancer, right? Mm-hmm. If you go to auditions and if you perform and you get a no, you know, it just feels like, you know,
yeah.
like my best is not good enough.
That rejection every year for sure. It was real hard. And I mean, so many years I cried.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, because you put your all into something and you know that this is what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you go and you bring across your song to the judges at the preliminary stage and you wait, you waiting for that
yeah.
call, right? That judge call.
I know, and it never come.
Exactly what the
NCA. I get you.
And it would never come. And I remember when it finally came in 2018, I literally ran up and down.
Yeah,
the house,
like this is your moment and you take it.
Exactly.
Love it. Well, as we explained, I believe you're one of the youngest pickety crop kings of Barbados, which is fantastic. But my real question to you is, Calypso and social commentary is seen as a older kind of, you know, genre of music that tells stories about socioeconomic discrepancies
Correct.
In society.
Correct.
And what made you feel comfortable or make it okay or make it cool to be still in the social commentary genre of music?
Well, I never felt, you know, like there was any kind of pressure when it comes to singing social commentary. I mean, that's what I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, sometimes my friends, but as I begin to listen to social commentary, they get a knack for it and they understand it a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one of my friends who went to Pickety Crop this year, and he's forever singing the lines, because when you listen to social commentary, mm-hmm. it makes you understand and realize so many things.
Yeah.
And
through music.
Lines, through music, exactly. Yeah. And one of the lines through one of these songs is that it was bashing the government.
Okay.
And it was saying that Griner, he can't eat the highway. Give him the same money, I think, as one of the other. I think it might have been Right Plastic Bye. Give him the same money as Right Plastic Bye, because he can't eat the highway, right?
Oh,
and he understood what that meant, that, mm-hmm. you know, there isn't equality on that level in terms of what they're receiving.
Yeah.
Again, I never felt pressured into singing Calypso as if, like, you know, I'm being judged because I'm a Calypsonian and, you know, all my other friends are into, you know, soca. This year, especially in the Pickety Crop competition, you know, we saw a lot more youngsters mm-hmm. within the finals, and I think every single person, I think we all are in our 20s.
Really?
I think, well, the youngest would have been Renan, I think he maybe is 19 or so.
Okay.
But we all came through the Scotia Bite Junior Monitor competition, and for
Fantastic.
Me that's really commendable. I think that we all, you know, brought a new vibe and a new look
mm-hmm.
to the Pickety Crop competition.
Mm-hmm. So, I think it's also a testament, again, coming from the perspective of the dancer and seeing the production from the back end, I believe that the team that you guys have, like the writers, mm-hmm. your family, your friends, you guys are really close-knit and really pushed. Like,
for
when
sure.
you come out to a social commentary or a Pickety Crop or the tents,
because
I used to dance in a tent, that is a whole situation. Mm-hmm. People come out as groups, like bring feather banners and everything just to support. And I think the support in that genre of music is so big that every year is literally like a driving force for the next year.
For
like,
sure,
let me
sure.
see what you can come with this year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. People have been saying that social commentary and the Pickety Crop competition is dying and so on, but I don't believe that at all. I mean, it's growing for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the honest truth. I love where it's going.
Fantastic. And I love that, because this is a perfect way to end is, you know, you love where it's going, but where do you want it to go for you?
I just see it. For me, it's always a platform. And I use this year as a platform to become a larger artist. Obviously, I'm trying to, you know, branch into the soca aspect now. Because, I mean, if you're being honest, that's where you're most recognizable as an artist. Don't get me wrong, people, it's very easy to make a living through social commentary.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to be an all-around artist. I think if you look at the greats, even Red Plastic Bike, he has dominated social commentary for many years. But he also, you know, saying soca. Gabby, although he is a social commentary person. He has a lot more up-tempo hits, mm-hmm. you know, from back in the day that would make you party and that kind of thing. Dr. Yeah. Casada is that mm-hmm. a perfect example.
Yeah.
So yeah, for me, it's important to, you know, tap into that party vibe now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to do this year.
I heard the other song. I can't remember.
Judge Me.
Judge Me.
Yeah, that was written by Sadis. For me, that was a good start, you know. Mm-hmm. That got me into the soca groove.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're not even waiting until next year. I have a studio session tomorrow with Polly Sugar. Boom.
Okay.
Yeah, man. So we're working on track right now. I got a track from Shaft as well in Trinidad. Mm-hmm. So within the next couple of months, obviously leading up to the Trinidad Carnival,
mm-hmm.
we're going to be releasing some tracks, and you know.
But before we go though, what is it like to work with the Water Street Boys?
Oh,
how can Shane it? Jones and Ian sure. Webster.
It has been absolutely amazing. And I started working with them in 2017. We had a song entitled Performance. That was my first ever song. And I guess the song really came from Shane and Ian Webster seeing that I'm really a performer and mm-hmm. you know, how dynamic I am on stage. And so that, for me, that song was an excellent song. I think that's the year that I really, really, really felt as though I should have, you know, made it to the brilliant, to the semifinal stage in the Monarch.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I didn't. I can't remember. I think I messed up or something like that. I think I went off key in the last verse or something like that at preliminary. Something happened along those lines. And I mean, it was really, really devastating.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that was in 2017. And then in 2018, they wrote Why I Sing. And for me, Shane and Ayiwa, they are true, true mentors. And I mean...
Love that.
Yes. When I think back, you know, I'm forever, forever in debt to both of them. Because I remember Ayiwa, at that time, he was teaching at Spring Memorial. And so many evenings, you know, we would go down. He would call me down and he would just guide me through performing and, you know, understanding the song and, mm-hmm. you know, being on stage and that kind of thing. And
when you lick down a pecan, how you hold it back, how you perform
it. It's funny because that year we had a finals verse. I remember he showed me, listen, when you're going into this last verse now, you gotta get serious now. Mm-hmm. So you can be up right now and you can step forward. And, yeah, man. And it was absolutely life-changing for me because mm-hmm. he was one of my idols
mm-hmm.
to say in Calypso. I mean, he's an absolutely amazing Calypsonian,
mm-hmm.
and you know, always used
and
to
he
watch.
Has that bravado that you always walk with.
Yeah, for mm-hmm. sure, for sure, for sure. Mm-hmm. So you know, I always used to watch Ayiwab on stage, and Shane, I mean, a giant of a man, honestly, because every single rehearsal
mm-hmm.
guaranteed that Shane is going to be there.
Fantastic. Yeah, I know that. I know that for sure.
It's amazing, man.
Mm-hmm.
So cool.
I love that. Well,
sure.
Congratulations again.
Thank
this
you
is
so
a great
much.
Discussion. We'll see you next year
of
to
course.
Snatch another car, another crown, invest in the crop over industry.
Definitely.
And also maybe take it another step. And it's all about social and political issues and how you want to bring that across. So yeah, maybe take it to social media and tell people, you know, this is what the song is really about. And as a man, this is how you know, want to push it.
True.
But thank you again, Kwan. This
no
is
problem.
Fantastic. Yeah.
See ya.
See ya.
Welcome to Lures Up Podcast with Basil D. Magazine.
Okay, so I just had an amazing discussion with Kwan. And, you know, behind every artist, you know, they say behind every queen, there's a king. Or behind every king, there's a queen. But behind every artist is an amazing manager, songwriter, supporter. And he literally just big you up so much. You didn't hear, but he just, like, pour his heart out to you in here. So we have the one and only newsman. Shane Jones is here to just give us the back end of Kwan and social commentary and Calypso and Crop Over 2022. So before we go into all of that, just give me... Actually, you know what? Let me ask you the same question I asked Kwan. If reincarnation was a thing, don't make me human again. I just want to be free.
Mm-hmm.
What does freedom mean to you?
Whoa, freedom. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I think you guys are doing a fantastic job. This is great, great content for our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are doing a good job, and I want you guys to continue. Freedom. Freedom means it's going to be different things to different people, mm-hmm. and it's going to be different things to the same person at different stages of their life,
mm-hmm.
you know? So when you make that call for saying, I just want to be free. Mm-hmm. Everyone is going to hear that and they're going to feel something different. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't want to put that down to any particular thing mm-hmm. because it's going to touch different people in many different ways.
But I
want
to know what it means to you.
Freedom.
Yes, whatever freedom means to you.
For me, freedom would mean being able to get up day in and day out and do what I love.
Mm.
Every single day, the way I want to do it. I'm happy, but I'm not totally free because there's some things that you still have to get up and go to work and you wish you just were going to the beach on that day.
Listen.
You know, and you're dictating your own pace. So yeah. I would not say totally free. So that's what freedom would be for me, getting up and doing what I want to do on my own terms every single day.
Mm, fantastic. And I think in this song, it was really playing on the whole notion of the animal kingdom mm-hmm. and the ecosystem of society mm-hmm. and how, you know, we played out COVID.
Yeah.
How COVID was and how the role switched.
Yeah.
The ant became the lion and the lion became the ant.
That's true.
And that was such an interesting metaphor for life. To see who really is the big dogs. Yeah. So give me your favorite event for Crop Over 2022.
My favorite events.
Yeah.
So my favorite event is Pickety Crop. I have not partied like that in a little while. I don't want to say.
Because the Pan Fusion was bomb.
It was fantastic. So yeah. I went to all the tents. I went mm-hmm. to Pickety Crop. You know, I went to the launch of the NCF. I gravitate towards events that I can feel a lot of culture in, and I can feel a lot of Beijing mm-hmm. in it. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to mm-hmm. the Soca Ruction because I know there have been a lot of local artists and that kind of thing. So I really, really love the culture. So those types of events, I would say the Pickety Crop Finals was my favorite event for the season.
Fantastic. Mine was, I said Pan Fusion, but I think it was another name. Pandemonium.
Pandemonium.
Yes, that was it. And as a dancer, you know, I mm-hmm. view performance and stage different. Mm-hmm. And as just like you, I love anything that feels like culture, that feels like rhythm and movement and anything like that. So let's take it back a little bit. Mm-hmm. I know that I would say you're a linguist and say you're an educated man, mm-hmm. but what really got you into writing?
Songwriting. Okay. So I was calypso tick.
Okay.
A social commentary tick from school days. So during the summer vacation, I was normally playing cricket for Combo Mirror, and the Pickety Crop finals rehearsals are at Combo Mirror.
Really?
So the rehearsal. So I would be pimping out there as a youngster, you know, listening you see Bag and you see Gabby and you see these guys and you're listening. And I remember late Sudan, I would sit in the back of rehearsals with him, you know, and he would give me a little nudge. You understand what I mean there? You understand that line? Mm-hmm. So then maybe in my late teens and early 20s, I wrote more poetry. I used to write poetry before.
Okay.
Right? But it wasn't anything that I would do that's our age in the social media. It wasn't posting it anywhere,
And you got a book and a pen.
Yeah, exactly. And there's nothing, you know, you go in and say, look at this poetry that he wrote, right? You know? We ain't grew up so.
It's true.
To be honest, you know, and I'm glad the world is changing and we're able to see
archive of things that
and the artsy part of the artistic side of especially males you know, we can see it on a huge stage and there's nothing wrong with writing poetry as a young boy and you know saying this is something that I love. It was different in the mid-90s, right?
So 2000s and rap and stuff was more popular.
So I would write poetry mm-hmm. and then Ian Webster, who I went to primary school with, Christchurch Boys, which is on Water Street.
We got there.
The older people in the community would say Water Street Boys instead of Christchurch Boys, which is now Milton Lynch. So Ian Webster won the crown in 2013. He went to primary school with me. And I remember I saw him in Sheraton because so remember I said, I write poetry, I love calypso.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him in Sheraton and, you know, I congratulated him. And I said, you know, I do a little thing. I write a little, you know, I write a thing. He said, man, he gave me his email address and he said, send me something you have. And I remember I sent him something. And he was like, listen, you are wasting your talent.
Mm.
And he's like, I want you to work with me.
I can hear Ian voicing that.
I want you to work with me.
Yeah.
My music for next year to defend my crown. I'm like, what? To defend your crown?
He's a little fish. Yeah. He's a big fish. Okay.
And then we worked together. And that's when he had, people call it Barbados is still my home.
Oh my gosh. Yes, that song gives me goosebumps.
It was our first song together.
Wow.
And he won the crown again.
I think I danced for that one.
Yes, you did.
Such a good song.
I think Aisha did that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Yeah, so I've been working ever since I was 2014.
Yeah, but the same thing that I told Kwan, and I think you touched on it a little bit, but social commentary is more about touching on the socio-political economic injustices in Barbados. And we use music and, you know, the pecans and the metaphors and the comedy, the political satire, the comedic satire in the music. And it's not really seen as cool and popular. But as young men, how do you make this fun and cool? And how do you make the younger guys gravitate to something that at the end of the day, you're kind of like queens, though. You're like pageant queens. You want world peace and you're using this type of music as world peace. So how do you make this fun for the younger crowd to, are more palatable for the younger crowd to like?
So the thing about social commentary and Calypso, as you said, it deals with a lot of socioeconomic things that are going on in the country, but it's also our story. And soca is a subgenre of social commentary. You get a lot of stories in soca as well, but it deals with different parts of our story, right? Which is easier, which is lighter, which stories that...
Senate mobby.
Yeah. You know, exactly, right? You don't have to really think about it that much. But when you're dealing with social commentary, because I always say that whenever you listen to a social commentary, if you listen to social commentary 10 years from now, you should listen to that social commentary and you should know what was going on in the country in that time. So it's something that, it's things that affect all of us. So there are a finite amount of topics that happen throughout the year that you can write about, but it's the angle that you bring it from. Now that's going to be different. So when and anybody could sing about COVID, anybody could sing about COVID, but then with Animal Kingdom, I'd rather be an animal. And music, wait, what? You give it a different, you sing, you talk about the same things that everyone's going to talk about, you know, but you have to come from a different angle. And when you come from a different angle, then you can reach different demographics. Social commentary has been done, you know, in certain ways for a very, very long time. Certain style, and this is supposed to be said, and that's supposed to be said, and this is the way you say it. And, you know, people, just different people have different voices and different deliveries, but it kind of felt like the same thing. So you got like a crowd that loved social commentary and people say this is not for me. You look at people like Kwan, you look at people like Terry, young people coming in the social commentary, and you start to see younger people come in to the tents because this person looks like me. They're saying they have a different delivery, a different style, and we're very excited about that because we have a lot of concepts and a lot of angles within ourselves that we can use these vessels to I don't want to say change social commentary because I want to or heads come telling me ignorance, but have different deliveries and different styles and different offerings and have the message of a social commentary in different ways for more people to enjoy.
I think what I like about social commentary and the junior monarch going into the Pick and the Crop is that it is a learning process. And I, again, coming from the dancer's perspective and seeing the back end of it, you have the writers, their managers, and parents coming to rehearsals with them, going through, like, I don't know if you guys have a writer's camp or something that NCF puts on for, like, the younger crowd. And so you have, like, a preliminary stage, the semifinal stage. And sometimes when you see the beginning product to the end product, it's so, like, gratifying to see how much these people have grown. And then moving from, like, Kwan, the junior monarch to the Pickety Crop, you're like, whoa, let me see what this person can really come for this year, you know? Like, it is a continuation of last year and it grows and it grows and it grows. So I think that's absolutely amazing. What is the process like after writing going into the studio with Ian?
Going into the studio with Ian. Well, I can say, Ian is a music teacher. I've been in the studio very few times with Ian. All I can tell you is that I've been to the studio with most of the artists. Because the thing about social commentary is that you have to make sure that they, first of all, understand what they're singing about.
Right.
They can...
That's what I want to know.
They can interpret it.
Yes.
And then they can deliver and communicate that message so it's heard and understood. Sometimes you have artists that sing a song and they can't, it doesn't get off the stage. People don't get into the message.
I might understand the metaphor that they're playing on.
Exactly, because there's so much with social commentary. So Kwan would tell you, it was almost at every rehearsal.
He did say that.
I'm doing it on the artists because you got certain punchlines, you have to, the people have to be there with you. When you set up these songs so people understand, okay, so this is what this is about, you have to deliver that in a way so you you set that playing field.
Especially for the last verse.
Yeah. The ping pong verse. Exactly. So then you need to know how to lead into it. Simple things that a lot of artists don't know. Some artists, you know, they say thank you very quickly and go off of the stage, and they don't let the song come to an end. Mm-hmm. So you know, you just say thank you and go off the stage, and people start clapping. The music's still playing, and then when the last note is struck, there's just silence. You're like, that really feels so good.
Yeah.
You know, you enjoy the song, enjoy with the people. You know, just certain little things, and you know, it's a joy because I love it, and because it was a tick so much. So it's a joy to go through the entire process with everyone.
With the Animal Kingdom, of course, we touched on COVID, but before that, what really inspired you to write about certain issues? Like, sometimes you might feel this issue, maybe your inspiration came in January, and by July, it really died down. Like, what really, like, motivates you, or what is the inspiration from certain songs that you write? For me, Still My Home feels like the National Pledge.
Yeah, Still My Home was just a feeling, you know. That was 2014.
No, I think that was 2015. No, but you would know.
Yeah, Still My Home was 2014. So there was an election in 2013 that was narrowly won.
Okay.
So the country was very divided.
Yes.
I think it was 2016, 2014 or something like that.
Yeah.
The country was divided. People from the party who didn't win, you would start talking about, I can leave Barbados. This is foolishness. I can't believe this happened. Mm-hmm. And so there was a feeling of, oh my goodness, Barbadians are tearing Barbados apart from the inside, you know? And it was like, but this is where we live. This is still our home.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was like a feeling. You know, Barbadians were taking to social media to say the worst things about Barbados just because, you know.
Even bitches from overseas.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it was like, but this is still our home. We felt very, very strongly about that. You know, very, very. And that song started, the country's comatose, fighting to live again.
It started with
The heartbeat,
you know, and I really pull on your heartstrings.
That was Nicholas Branker.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rounding it off for me, though, you guys did an amazing job for the season, and you captured at least 4 or 5 artists in the finals.
Five artists.
How is it to have so many artists dividing your time, five different places, rooting for 5 different people, having 2 people in the top 2? Like, how does that feel? What does that look like?
Yeah, that was very hard.
Okay.
Be very honest with you, because when it gets to, you know, competition mode, then I would take on more of it, because Ian is competing.
Right. Yeah.
So, but one thing I must say, that Ian, we had a conversation this year, and he's extremely professional, and I was like, Ian, we are both in our 30s. If we continue writing, Gabby and Invade and them still writing. If we continue writing 40 more years, there will be many times that people will beat you with songs that you've written.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we going this hard. We can't be having people in the final and push sharking with somebody else or what's not. And he was like, no, professionalism. And he was true to that.
Okay.
So, but what I will say is that, so our artist plays first, second, fourth, second, last, and last.
Okay.
So I was very torn.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I had to speak to somebody about it.
And that's interesting, though.
And so you want to celebrate the people that did well.
Yeah.
But you feel guilty for celebrating what others felt didn't do so well.
Are defeated.
You want to feel bad. You felt bad with the people that didn't do so well, but you don't want to feel ungrateful for the success that you've had.
Right.
So, you know, it's a thing of being gentle with yourself and understanding that all these things can be true.
Okay.
You can feel good and you can feel bad, and that's fine. The feelings will settle down after a while.
Yeah.
So I you know, it's something that I really thinking about in terms of my mental going forward, because I know
from a mentorship's point of view.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know that, you know, we want to do more. We want to have even more people in the final. Like, we had 4 people in the final in 2019. Mm-hmm. In 2022, we had 5 people, and people have been telling us it's the most. And I believe so, because it's only since 2019 I had so many people in the finals. It used to be 8 people in the final.
Mm-hmm.
So when I had 8 people in the final, I can't imagine a writer would have 5 out to the 8.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's something that we have to look at going forward. And as a dancer, you would understand that, you know, artists, you know, at the end of the day, 7 people will say what they think is good and what they think isn't, and that but that's not what it is.
Yeah, art is subjective.
Yeah, exactly.
Art is subjective. Well, to round it off, this was great. What do you see social commentary being like in 10 years? What does that look like for you?
Oh,
you got a little CJ, so I mean, there's that.
Yeah, I really like what we have been doing in Water Street Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And we pushed the envelope quite a few times, and times it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people are looking at what we are doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind it. Well, if we continue to think of how can we continue to make this appealing for a wider cross section of people,
mm-hmm.
and the Calypso. I keep saying I don't want to say change, and the Calypso develops into this type of thing where we tell our stories in the most pleasant way possible, mm-hmm. the most creative way mm-hmm. as possible. We keep trying to keep people on their toes. We're not settling. Mm-hmm. We write a line and we're saying, how can this be better? Mm-hmm. We think of a concept and we say, how can this be better? Mm-hmm. How can this appeal to more people?
Mm-hmm. How do we leave the audience questioning society, their worth,
yeah.
and also, you know, everything around
yeah.
them?
Yeah, and give people a show at the final.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I always like that show, you know, yeah, the yeah. theater, that kind of thing. Yes. You know, I love dancers.
Drama.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So
if we continue along this path, I think more people are going to get involved in social commentary. Mm-hmm. More young people are going to get involved, and that argues well for the future and the sustenance of the art form.
Wow, beautiful, great ending. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having
great.
Me.
Great. I love it. All the best to you guys next year. I know Kwan told me that you guys are starting to look at, you know, producing stuff for Carnival mm-hmm. and stuff. So I wish you the best and a successful 2023 writing, producing, everything.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. This episode was recorded and produced by Robbie at Nameless Productions.